This is Issa Khan with The Long View. This is our final segment in a series of segments addressing the conflicts that most directly involve Israelis, Lebanese, and Palestinians. History professor Christoph Strobel and political science professor Art Holzlag join us today to unravel the politics, economics, and cultural influences that have escalated into such animosity. We seek to understand what has gone so terribly awry in that region. We also try to reserve time towards the end of the segment to discuss peace strategies that have proven successful in other high-conflict regions. Before we move on to the discussion, please note that our new website is now simply thelongview.net. Please visit the site for more information on today's topic and a myriad of other news and online tools. That's thelongview.net. Now for our topic. Welcome, Christoph and Art. First, if I could ask you to share just a few details of your background and research, formal or otherwise. Christoph, would you mind being first on this?
All right, I'll be the guinea pig. I teach classes in world history, Native American history, African history, and also class in Middle Eastern history. And my research and publishing sort of deals with issues of colonization, violence, land issues, race, ethnicity. So all these issues play out fairly largely in the region of the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. In the big picture. And Art, would you also share a little of your background?
My background is in political science. I teach political science and specifically international relations. Within that field, I teach things such as also ethnicity, identity, but also human rights and conflict issues.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Great. We're really lucky to have you this morning. Thank you. What is the nature of the conflict that maintains these very long-term hostilities between the Israelis and Lebanese? They're Jews and Muslims. But is that the issue, the religious differences? I'll ask either of you. Just jump in.
Do you want to tackle that, Art?
I don't think that it is necessarily a religious issue. I think that the religious aspects do play a role nowadays, but that they have come in much later, that the reality of the issue is a land issue, a territorial issue. And as such, it is important to see that two groups of people live on a piece of land that both would want to live. And I think that's the essence of, but then it becomes much more complicated because the area is geographically, strategically a very important area in world politics, and as such plays a role for other countries to come in and portray their interest on the region.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Could you elaborate more specifically? What are some of these interests, and who has them?
Well, almost everybody nowadays has interest in oil. Oil is the big issue. China building up like crazy. India building up like crazy. Both need a lot of oil. The United States having problems with their oil. France, Europe in general has an enormous need for oil. So oil in the region is one of the main strategic issues. But you also have to look that the Middle East is the passageway between Europe and Asia, as well as the passageway between Europe and Africa. And as such, in the middle of important trade and communication lines.
Mm-hmm. Do some of those interests also include trying to keep the, you know, what Americans are being told are all terrorists? Is Israel a buffer, for the United States?
As far as I'm concerned, I think terrorism is an issue also that comes in later. And what you call a terrorist, of course, is a question of definition in that sense. I remember Arafat getting the Nobel Peace Prize and then, 15 years later being called a terrorist. So as such, you have to take a look at that. But at the moment, there is this feeling that there is a possibility of terrorism within the Arab community. But that is more an outcome, I would say, of policies than the beginning of policies and interests.
Right. Well, Christoph, what do you see as some of the interests that, actually sustain conflicts in that region, interests specifically of the United States?
I'm not so sure if it's really, if the conflict is really in the interest of the United States. There are some debates among experts that there might be, that this could be a proxy war between really Iran, Syria, and the United States. But I really think that that this might be a factor, but I also think that there's really sort of these ingrained conflicts or that deal with land security, especially in Israel. There's sort of this mentality that we are pressed with our backs against the ocean. Of course, the rest of the Arab world then claims, well, your military spending alone outstrips the entire military spending of the Middle East. So this is also something to keep in mind. The religious factor, I don't think, is much of a factor here. It's about power and politics. When you look at the Katyusha rockets that went into northern Israel, a lot of the casualties, and I've seen numbers ranging from one-third to one-quarter, of people dying in Israel are actually Arabs living in Israel. What we need to realize, too, about Lebanon, there's a strong division within the Muslim community. Northern parts, heavily inhabited by Sunni Muslims. The Hezbollah is a Shiite organization that's very strong in southern Lebanon. And then also important is the strong Christian population that exists in southern Lebanon. So there's a complicated ethnic, religious mix there that seems to be pulled into this conflict that's been going on really since the 1970s. Mm-hmm. We have to realize that Lebanon until the 1970s was jokingly called the Switzerland of the Middle East, a very wealthy nation that then gets dragged into this nasty civil war.
Right, Switzerland known for neutrality.
Yes.
And wealth.
Between Israel, Syria, maybe Iran, maybe the United States. There's a lot of sort of not so clear evidence that is around there. But it's the Lebanese people and the Israeli people that suffer in this conflict right now, and the people in the Middle East, which is very regrettable.
Clearly. Well, now this is a rather broad sweeping question, but what do you believe needs to occur between these cultures? You just enumerated these cultures. What needs to happen between them for some understanding, over in the Middle East, outside of what nations can do outside of that region?
I think Art's probably better to answer that question because he's working in international relations. But I think historically what has always worked is that if people sit down and talk and communicate, and I feel that these lines of communication have broken down. In the past, too, the United States, which was much more active, seen by many Arab countries as more partial to Israel, but at least more active in being involved in peacemaking. The Reagan administration was very active in the 1980s. A huge number of Marines were killed in the mid-1980s. Because of peace involvement in Lebanon. So the United States has had a history of involvement, of trying to make peace, whether partial towards Israel or not. I don't want to tackle that issue.
But let me ask you something, though, and
they have really withdrawn with the coming of the Bush administration out of the region and sort of let the ball drop, in my opinion.
No, that's interesting. Well, let me ask you. With the motivation such as, this idea in the United States created by our current administration that we need to protect ourselves, and the motivation of money and overall power, these motivations, I would think, are more powerful motivations than, the cultural niceties that might result from just talking. How do we negotiate those things? How do we negotiate those very, very powerful motivations of money and power? And do you know what I'm asking here? So
I'm kind of wondering if you, in peaceful relations, can't accumulate more money. It seems from a business perspective to make more sense. So I think that there is, maybe there's this grand conspiracy of money or power, or maybe it's people just got themselves in a mess that Hezbollah interests, then Israeli needs to, for security, have caused people to overreact. And sort of the international community is now trying to say, wait a minute, you guys, it's, you're obviously out of hand. So that's my kind of perspective on it. Maybe Art can add anything
Art?
To this.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we should be doing is talk to all the parties involved. I think what has been going on is that the international community, and especially the United States, has failed to communicate its ideas and its interests to all the parties involved. It seems very clear that the United States has an agenda and its own interest in the conflict, and as such, has ignored very important issues that play a role. And this, you know, Christoph kind of said that, well, there are people talking about Syria and Iran being involved, or a proxy war, etc., etc. Of course, Syria and Iran are involved in the sense of weapons, but I think that it is not necessarily a proxy war. That's a total different issue.
Right.
But leaving, talking to the Syrians and the Jordanians, who have not been in the picture at all, leaving those talks up to the French seems kind of disingenuous. And that, I think, is problematic.
Right, right.
It has a lot to do with the international agenda of the Bush administration. And I think that Christoph was absolutely right that the Bush administration, as soon as they came into power in 2000, said, we are not going to continue the line of the Clinton administration. Well, you know, we can be very critical of the Clinton administration, but one of the things that Clinton at least had some success in was in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that it was overwhelming, but he had some success. Now, they dropped the line only after the Second Intifada started. Did the Bush administration haphazardly come to the table without any knowledge of the issue?
Right, right. And we know that we have a president who actually admittedly doesn't want the details. I mean, I mean that to say this is something that he articulates to his staff. So I'm not taking a guess at this. This is something about his own personality. And I feel that the interior of the administration are not very well informed in details, particularly on international issues.
It seems interesting that Condoleezza Rice was left to take this for herself now, which, you know, was not the case beforehand. And as soon as she got in charge of the issue, things seemed to change. But I still would say that the international agenda of the United States is focused on Iraq. And therefore, Syria is being considered as an aggressor.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, had an enormous effect on how the conflict played out, because the forcing out of Syria, out of Lebanon, created the possibility for Hezbollah to use its arms and start a conflict.
Right, and we need to be clear on the role of Hezbollah, and Lebanon is very much a support organization for regular Lebanese people. So, you know, they are making friends, they are winning friends, unlike, you know, those who will go in and well, result in, you know, conflict that will result in murder is not winning friends over, and simply put.
Can I comment on that?
Absolutely.
Because I think that one of the things that is not being reported very well in the American media is that organizations like Hezbollah and Hamas, however they are violent, and, you know, that should be deplored, but, you know, they also serve as a very important social organization. There where the state fails in Lebanon and in Palestine is where Hamas and Hezbollah come in.
Mm-hmm.
This allows for these organizations to become important political organizations. And by denying these people, through, you know, in the case of Hamas, fair democratic elections, and then denying them access to the political system, you do not help the situation.
Right.
And I think that is what has happened with Hezbollah as well, by saying, okay, Hezbollah should be this and should be that. Let's also say Hezbollah has an important function in the Lebanese and specifically the southern Lebanese society. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to counter that, you will have to make sure that there is a social fabric or a social plug-in that
will absorb some of those services, also provide shelters, also provide food, also provide medical care, because this is what Hezbollah is providing to regular Lebanese people. So naturally, they are winning friends.
Yeah, and this conflict has, in a sense, exasperated the situation dramatically, because now many people all over the Middle East within Lebanon look at Hezbollah. At the outset of the war, they were like, why did you abduct these two soldiers? You got us in a real pickle. Now, as Hezbollah was fighting back and standing the ground, people look at Hezbollah as heroes.
I'm sorry, you have to be specific.
In Lebanon and all over the Middle East, if you read blogs, you listen to reporting,
right, we just need
in
to
the
be
region.
Clear.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The Israeli attack has really strengthened Hezbollah's position. The Bush administration 1 year ago was advocating and proclaiming that one of his successes in the Middle East was the so-called Cedar Revolution, when a government came into power in Lebanon that kicked out the Syrians and increased its influence. And the Bush administration celebrated that as a success of his Middle East politics. Now, this government has been tremendously weakened in the eyes of its own people and by Hezbollah, because Hezbollah is increasing its power, is seen as a much more viable and working alternative.
Right.
Because
and
it covers the basic needs.
And it's working on that. I mean, this morning Hezbollah has pronounced that they will give the people who lost their houses during the Israeli bombardments will get free rent from Hezbollah. Well, that builds support among the people. Those kind of things is what I'm talking about if I say, look, Hezbollah provides very important social services and creates a support basis. And, you know, you have to keep that in mind.
Right. To address something you said earlier, Art, about, you know, the disingenuous support of, Condoleezza Rice, support of, I believe you were saying, sort of Syria, and go back to that point, because I'm interested in that, because last week we talked a bit about, after we did some research over here, you know, almost all of the weapons that Israel has, almost every single bit of them are from the United States, mm-hmm. either given away for free or sold to them.
Yeah,
so, you know, when you say disingenuous, that's kind of what came to my mind.
Well, you have to see that the role of the United States is one of in support of Israel. There's no question about that. There's a reason for that, and, you know, far be it from me to criticize that reason. At the same time, if you have a specific interest in the region, you have to realize that you thereby make friends on one side and enemies on the other side. We are in a situation in which everybody is very much occupied with the feeling of terrorism, fundamentalist Muslims, or radical Muslim, whatever that may be, you know, because for me it's not quite clear what people mean by that. At the same time, that comes also out of that one-sided support for one party in the region.
Right.
And in the case of Lebanon, I would say that plays a role in the sense that the Bush administration has been supporting Israel, but more so has finger-pointed Syria Iran.
And that might be a bit of a red herring.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Well, you know something, as usual, The 20 minutes is just not nearly enough time. I want to thank you both so much for your time on a super summer morning to come in between semesters, between the time that you're teaching. And I just encourage people to visit thelongview.net for more links and information.